Good morning, 740 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's good to be back home talking in the studio with my producer instead of in the hotel room in Milwaukee trying to cover the convention, which I will do again for the DNC because I will. That's, I think, necessary. Although, weirdly, now it's not as interesting a thing because it looks like it's just going to be, Kamala Harris. And so maybe all the hubbub is going to die away by the next 2 weeks. We'll see. Joining me here in studio today, we have Chief Deputy Tommy Leiter for the Escambia County Sheriff's Office, former PPD Chief. Chief, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Always good to have you. And for those who care, we were in LEAP together, Leadership Pensacola, Class 2016, best class ever.
Best class ever.
So I appreciate that. Let's talk. Okay. I don't want to say this because I know you guys hate it when I say it, but it's kind of been quiet this week.
You know, it is interesting when you say that. And I think I'll say pushback, but the pause in our voices, there's so much going on. We have.
Well, you also have the superstition kind of the don't say it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a big part of it. And it's not necessarily newsworthy. We made some great narcotics arrests, traffic stop narcotics arrests, but that's a small fraction of what we're going on. There's 721 employees. 438 of us are sworn. We're in the middle of block training right now. So we just did active shooter training. That's a heavy lift.
Where did you do that at? Was it a school this year?
We didn't do a school this year. We'll hit a school next year, bring in the real-time crime center because they have access to cameras. So we'll pick a location that we're the training for real-time crime center as well.
Oh, okay.
And we can integrate the cameras. And how well does that
Yeah, that makes sense. Right.
All the pieces are there, but if you don't train on it,
you won't use them right under a crisis, right? Yeah,
exactly. You go in stress situations, you're going to go back to your training. There's so much. About 90%, maybe 95% of what our narcotics unit's doing, we'll never be able to talk about on the radio. We have some phenomenal. Every single day they go to work, they're swinging for the fences. It's just great police work. And I sit here on the radio and say, it's a quiet day.
Yeah.
And, our intel units working every day, our investigators with the open some of our open homicide cases and just our major cases that we're working. They don't spend a day on it and then move on. It's a months long, multiple deputies tie into it. We get briefings every morning on it, weekly on some of the big stuff. There's a lot of work going on.
I have a weird abstract question for you that make me think of all of a sudden. As you were talking, I was thinking about all of the daily work that goes on, like showing up to a domestic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got a domestic disturbance, you show up, your officers de-escalate, and, they either resolve their problems or they split up or, whatever. Okay, every outcome can be different. And it made me think about the crimes you prevent.
Yeah.
The situations you thwart by your presence, by your training, by working with people that don't become a news, okay? Which to me, that's a win, right? That's the success. I mean, yes, catching somebody after they've done something bad is also success, but the deterrence, discouragement, avoidance, de-escalation, that's also success. And I don't know if you have any way to track that. Do you have any kind of metrics for, we went to this address and then there was no follow-up, that nothing else had to be done? Because I know, well, we've been to that address 10 times and then there was a homicide and that's a horrible story. But do you have a way of measuring success as avoidance or crimes that didn't happen?
It's interesting because we were standing up. We just stood up the co-responder unit with the Lakeview Center.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only about 2 weeks
old. For behavioral health stuff.
Behavioral health. What we're tracking, though, the metrics we're tracking is we have multiple calls to a house. It's 13, 14, 16, on and on and on. Multiple Baker acts.
Yeah.
And then we stood up this unit. We actually have the deputy that is co-responding with the Lakeview Center has been working for about 6 months now and has been doing follow-ups. And so we're tracking that metrics, and we do have cases, homes, where it's gone to zero just because we have that deputy that's conducting follow-ups.
That's awesome. That's
we're
great.
Partnering with University of West Florida to track those metrics. We had a meeting with them, started a couple months ago. I love partnering with University of West Florida. They've done a number of studies. When I was the chief of police, they helped
the Haas Center.
Staffing studies, the Haas Center.
Yeah, they're fabulous.
And in this case, it's Hassan Bukhar, which works in criminal justice.
Okay.
It's just phenomenal. So they're sending in interns. We'll go through, are we asking the right questions? How do we follow up on that? Just how successful is this going to be?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of money goes into it, federal dollars that are pouring into that co-responder unit model. And we want to measure how successful it is. Are we asking the right questions from the very beginning? So that partnership with the University of West Florida is going to be beneficial. It'll take a year or more, 18 months, before we really get an accurate picture of it.
But. Right. And I mean, of course, tracking these things takes time and getting the data analyzed takes time. I was even thinking about things like, you know, the area around Diego Circle has been in the news a lot lately. And it made me think of, you know, do you track that over time? And do you try different tactics of we're going to send patrol around, you know, every 2 hours, every hour, and see if that makes a difference. You know, that's the kind of stuff I was thinking about, that kind of experiment and get results. Yeah.
And you know, the surveillance vans that kind of laughingly do it, but it's successful.
But very deployed at Blue Angels. I saw you had several solar-powered ones, and then you also had the van. I saw the van, yeah.
And you had the nuisance houses where, you know, the indication maybe there's some narcotics using or selling, and our narcotics unit can't get in there for whatever reason, or it's just loud music or whatever the nuisance complaint is, we put that surveillance van out there and it would go to zero.
Yeah.
And so, yes, to answer your question, I don't know we're measuring it. It's difficult to measure how many crimes did we deter today. But I can tell you we track the parties that will go on year. So May party or whatever, this party,
right, the annual year event,
after year,
right,
after
right.
year. And our real-time crime center is tracking that, the intel unit's tracking that. So we said, hey, the last 3 years we've had, you know, 800 people show up here and we've had a number of shootings. We're taking the initiative. Last year we started doing it and it's gone to zero.
Let's go there before we get called there.
And it's gone to zero.
Good.
So it is absolutely, there's most cost effective, say not cost effective, but the best crime prevention tool is uniformed police officer.
Yeah.
It's just
being on the
you
scene.
You can imagine. That's
people,
it.
Yeah, people behave. They drive the speed limit when you guys are near. I mean, that's just true. You guys also did a recognition for a canine streeter, who was the dog who jumped over the ledge chasing the bad guy after the shooting that killed that elderly woman about a month or so ago, I think,
yes.
now.
Yep.
Nice to recognize the canine. Did he get extra good treats, I hope?
He did, yes. you know, I was a canine handler for a number of years, and
You've done everything.
It seems like
you've done SWAT. You've done rescue diving. Yeah, you've done
boat team.
Yeah,
SWAT team, street crimes. But I've been policing for 34 years, so it has been a wonderful career. I'm still going. So
yeah,
it is a wonderful career. But yeah, streeters. So the you know the canines. When you're watching that video, you can see the dog zero in on the suspect. You can watch their ears. They'll actually go up. It's called targeting. And then they'll go back down. And you can see the minute he does it that he's on, he's going to follow that guy anywhere. Sure enough, he jumps over that bridge and you kind of collectively hold your breath because you know it's 40 feet.
Right.
That's 40 feet. I wasn't aware when you look at it, you know, there's water and then it's not water. The shore stops it and that's where two of them fell and one died. So when you see that dog go over there, you're like, oh, this
you're holding
is
your breath,
end.
Right.
This is not going to end well. And the whole time that we're looking for the other guys, that dog's swimming out looking for his suspect. He was
he's still going for the bad guy.
He's still targeting looking for that guy. So
that's amazing.
It's pretty cool to watch the canines.
I mentioned just a moment ago, but the I didn't realize that you have a dive team for not only police department, but at the Scammie Sheriff's Office and boat as well. But tell me more, because I just didn't realize. It makes sense, but I didn't realize.
So we actually gave that when Sheriff Simmons was the chief of police. We gave the dive team and the boat team to the sheriff's office.
Okay.
It's expensive to maintain, and we just weren't getting the calls for service. So Escambia County Sheriff's Office is the regional dive team.
They're
the county dive team also. Phenomenal divers. We actually were out there with that missing child, the autistic child that drowned. It was our dive team that went in those lakes and found him. We had three different lakes, and it's sad to see that stuff. But
so that's what they're doing, is looking for if a cargo's in the water or if you're looking for a person or evidence or, you know, somebody throws a gun over the bridge, that kind of thing.
Exactly, yep. They'll find a body. Anything to do with water, they're in it. You'd mentioned cars. That seems to be pretty common.
Yeah.
Evidence is pretty common. And then they have tools. They have side-scan sonar, so we can pull the sonar across and locate bodies or cars or something.
Really?
Like that.
Huh, okay, makes sense.
The water's big enough, and then we'll send a diver in the water. So it is... So I said I did it a number of years, and it's hard. It's a unique experience. It elicits its own emotions. You can't see me on the radio, but
I can tell you're reacting to what you remember. Yeah,
you think about you're looking for some lost child in a pond that was zero visibility. You can't see your hand, so it's all feel. So you're moving along, just kind of looking, and then you're all of a sudden you're right upon this little, you know, this 4-year-old little kid, and it's like, oh, I was hoping not to find something in here, right, actually. So it, what they do, every, it's a peripheral job, secondary. So they're patrol officers, they're detectives, their full-time job is policing, and then their secondary job, like our SWAT team, is is diving on top of all the training evolution. So it's a heavy lift. And what they do is, it matters. Like you'd mentioned, you didn't even know we had a dive team. I think most people listening to it didn't even think we have a dive team. But it's just part of that conversation of how much we're doing behind the scenes.
And then,
we're not busy.
Yeah, there's always stuff.
Be newsworthy kind of thing.
And I mean, that's the activity of daily policing. And, you know, it's obviously somebody's doing the dive rescue stuff. And you think, well, who does it? Oh, I don't know. But I guess the shit makes sense. I did want to ask you, just because you were the chief police, now chief deputy, we've obviously been talking a lot with everybody who, all the police are talking about the Secret Service, the failure, the assassination attempt on President Trump. And you and I were talking before you came on the air, and you said something interesting. I think everybody will understand about having worked these details and the men and women on the front line as opposed to the management.
Exactly. Yeah, I've interacted with a number of Secret Service agents over the course of my career, and not just protecting the president. They also work fraud and forgeries and crimes against banking. Every single time, 100% of the time when I interact with those agents, they are phenomenal people, well-trained, dedicated to their job, just especially their SWAT team. We interact with a SWAT team. A lot of them are former military, you know, special forces guys. These guys are top tier.
I've heard some pretty impressive numbers about their accuracy distance. If they see a problem, the problem isn't going to be there.
And that, you know, that the failure on this was at the top. You can see, you can hear that. You had mentioned it listening to her talk it in front of Congress. And it was just, you could see where the problem is. Mm-hmm. And that's an easier fix, in my opinion, because if you have you see some of the failures in law enforcement, you have the George Floyd, that kind of stuff.
Right.
The question is, if it's a deputy or an officer or an agent on the bottom, the question then is it systemic?
Right.
Because it's not just top, is it an individual person? But oftentimes what you'll find is it's not necessarily the top, it's always the leadership. But how far down does it go? Where at the Secret Service, I don't think it does. I think it's the top. You replace the top, which I suspect is going to happen, and then it's a much easier fix.
And that, which to me is reassuring, because as we're all talking about the Secret Service failure, you know, the issue of where is the competence, and the competence at the level of the ordinary person, an ordinary officer, is very high. And as you say, it's a lot easier to fix if the problem is in the management. And then the question is, well, how did they get there, and how can we get better people in there? And, you know, is that a byproduct of being political appointees and all the other things that come along with it?
And there's, you know, the three fixes for this: leadership, leadership, leadership. Mm. And they've got to address, obviously, that leadership. That responsibility matches authority. Mm-hmm. If that sniper didn't have the authority to address that threat, he can't be responsible for it.
Right.
So who's responsible? Who ultimately can say, hey, you got to take that guy out? That's the guy that ultimately has the authority to do that, then he's ultimately responsible. And it's above that poor guy that was on the end of that rifle, that was on the radio saying, hey, we got a problem over here. And, you know, how disheartening was that,
right,
for him to have that conversation and not be able to act on it?
To know what was going on and not be able to immediately take action under whatever circumstance that turns out to have been.
I don't have the concerns moving forward that you hear it on the radio. It's like, oh my gosh, how bad is this? And having interacted with them, and, you know, like I said, 34 years in policing, some at the pretty high levels, looking at that from the outside, I think we're going to be just fine. We'll address the top.
As long as we make a few changes.
We got to make some changes.
Key changes at the top. All right, very interesting. Tommy Leiter, he is the chief deputy for the Escambia County Sheriff's Office, here in studio with me today. Chip was out. But Tommy, always good to have you on the radio. I super appreciate it. And thanks for doing what you do to keep us safe and keep us informed, man.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
Absolutely.